How can I sex up this blog business? Hot gossip, cool gadgets, Gawker and Gizmodo, Fleshbot, and Wonkette. Inside Nick Denton's Plan to Become the Nano Publishing Media Mogul. By Stephen Leavitt. 1. Gawker Stalker, Nick Denton's Hotspot. Just spotted Gawker founder Nick Denton at his new American Gigolo-style loft on Spring Street in Soho. Nick looks a little goofier in person than in his photos. He's got a big head, I mean, literally. He was standing by the window smoking a cigarette, trying to move his laptop in position to swipe bandwidth from a Wi-Fi spot across the street. Didn't look like a media magnate to me. It's a cold day in early April, and the heat isn't working in the loft Nick Denton moved into a week ago. He's turned the oven of his huge Viking range to 320 and propped open the door. The blue flames of all four burners on the stainless steel hearth are flicked to high. And now, jiggling his Sony Vaio at the window, Denton is trying to get a web connection to download some files before meeting with Cho Iyersika, the tattooed art gallery director, who is his flagship writer and informal editorial director. The meeting could have been held a few blocks south at Denton's wired-up office, but that chunk of real estate, a small parcel of loft space shared with an interior decorating company, is already packed with three workers. Clearly, this is not Rupert Murdoch's world. In Nick Denton's nano publishing empire, that last word is usually accompanied by eye rolling and air quotes. The meat of his Gawker media enterprise, after all, is not newspapers or satellites or movies but weblogs, until recently viewed as non-revenue generating megaphones for online blogging. Denton, a part Hungarian, part Jewish, matter-of-factly gay, and cheerfully iconoclastic 37-year-old British expat, has recruited a squad of talented workaholic misfits who use movable type, sexual prurience, and relentless snarkiness to draw enough of a crowd to lure advertisers. While he isn't making a bundle yet and doesn't claim that he ever will, Denton is making a splash that seriously are rattling the media hierarchy. The empire, as it were, includes four websites and a just-unveiled blog portal that helps people organize their weblog reading. New York City-based Gawker is a chatty morph of Page Six, and the Old Spy magazine a must-read for anyone involved in the Gothamites too of news junkiness, celebrity trash, and bitchy gossip. A gadget-oriented blog called Gizmodo is a daily destination for thousands of propeller heads. Porn-focused Fleshbot mixes irony with onanism. And for those living inside the DC Beltway who know what to modem is, smart-mouthed Wonkette has fast become as entrenched in the capital as agriculture subsidies. And now the empire is expanding, with Denton planning to add six blogs this year. That's why Sika is here. Decked in a short-sleeved up-unbuttoned to reveal an undershirt, Sika fires up a Winston as the two hunch over Denton's laptop to consider writers and names for some of the new properties. Looks like the celebrity hazing Louisiana site will be called The Famer. Empire building. 2. Nick Denton returns to Soho House. Rumor on the street is that Nick Denton is apparently back in the good graces of Soho House, the members-only meat district watering spot favored by Brit journalists, after he was almost kicked out when Gawker wrote about the dirty carpet in the snotty exclusive private club. Denton's path to becoming a molecular version of the Rube was long in the making. He was reading The Economist when he was 13, says David Galbraith, who met Denton at University College School in London. I always thought he would go places. But according to Denton's own account, offered with a mix of self-deprecation and artful spin, he drifted a bit after getting a degree in economics and politics at Oxford. Somehow he wound up in Bucharest. Denton had stumbled into the 1989 Romanian Revolution, and some journalistic impulse led him toward the action, even though bullets were flying. I liked it for one day, he says, of covering armed conflict. Afterward it's cold and dirty and boring and scary. Denton moved 2 months later to Budapest, and began sending dispatches to British publications, eventually winding up with a job at the Financial Times. After a few years of reporting from Eastern Europe, he headed home to London, to cover investment banking, ultimately co-authoring a book on the Barings Bank scandal. His hope, however, had been to cover another kind of revolution, that thing in Silicon Valley. While still in Hungary, he took the train every month to Austria, solely to eat sushi and purchase a copy of Wired. In August 1997, Danton finally landed his dream assignment based in San Francisco as the FT's Silicon Valley correspondent. He quickly saw how easy it was in the dot-com hothouse to jump from observer to participant. His journalistic output was slim. His biggest project was a long memo to his boss proposing an aggressive new web strategy for the FT. It was ignored. But by all accounts, his networking was prodigious. After a few months, he quit the paper, and in early 1998, with two friends he'd known since high school, started Moreover Technologies, which specialized in scooping up online news from around the globe and repackaging it to businesses. That year, Danton returned to London, for a time to be with his mother, who was terminally ill. While there, he and some friends threw a cocktail party in a Soho bar to network internet startup people and bankers. The event went so well that people began giving up money to sponsor events, he says, and the monthly parties known as First Tuesday became what he calls an accidental company. It grew to hold events in 80 cities, though its business model was never very clear. In mid-2000, amazingly, after the bubble burst, Danton and his friends sold First Tuesday to an Israeli company for $50 million in stock and cash. Moreover, he's still around. It recently cut a deal with Microsoft to handle content for MSN's news service, but Danton exited the CEO post 3 years ago, though he's still on the board. "I feel like I failed with those two companies," he says. "More could have been done with them." In summer 2001, he left San Francisco with a raised middle finger, writing a blistering attack for UK-based Management Today on the corrupt and lethargic city and the culturally and socially flawed Silicon Valley. With money in his pocket, he was ready for a new business, New York City style. Nick Danton had discovered blogs. 3. Tired of Denton's talking? Deal with it. Spotted the Nickster walking from Tribeca to Soho wearing a brown Dolce & Gabbana blazer. Quite the change from the sweaters with holes in them that he wore living in SF, who says he's cheap. Danton believes good media isn't the product of careful planning. "When Murdoch does something, I think he just goes on the gut," he says. "Most good media come out of somebody saying, 'This should exist, this is something I want to read.'" That's pretty much what happened one night in 2002. While drinking with a couple of journalists, Danton asked whether it wouldn't be cool to take this blog format and apply it to a category like gadgets and sell ads as if it were a real publication. It wasn't a casual idea for him. Danton had been speaking with evangelistic fervor about the movement for months. He had his own blog and even tried to buy Pira Labs, creator of Blogger software, from founders Evan Williams and Meg Hourihan. Danton's next step was offering Peter Rojas, an underemployed freelancer, says Danton, money to do the gadget venture. Other bloggers had attempted to make money from their efforts, with mixed to dismal results. Danton proposed something a bit different. The bloggers would be his employees, working on contract instead of as full-timers with benefits. Though he wouldn't edit them beforehand, he'd offer feedback. Their voices and sensibilities would be the draw, but Danton would own the brand. Gizmodo went online in August 2002, and the early adopter crowd quickly made it a habit. Disclosure: Wired's Gadget Lab newsletter has a content-sharing agreement with Gizmodo. Danton exhorted Rojas, as would become his custom with all his writers, to sex things up. Danton was in heaven when Gizmodo featured a combination bicycle seat and dildo. His next move was Gawker, the blog of New York entertainment and buzz. It would require the perfect author, someone with a prodigious ability to dig for the best links, an unerring sense of the zeitgeist, and above all, world-class writing talent. Danton's choice was a then 26-year-old unknown freelance equity analyst from Alabama. How did he know he wanted Elizabeth Spears? He read her blog. "It's revolutionized the business of spotting talent," he says. forget about someone's resume or how they present themselves at a party. Can they be LOG or not? The BLOG doesn't lie. In any case, it's hard to imagine a better gawker than Spears. I don't personally care about celebrities, she explains, and that, combined with a general misanthropy, made her the ideal author for a website obsessed with the famous and read by people who wish them ill. JLO, a frequent target of Spires' poison-tipped barbs, never knew what hit her. Nor did Graydon Carter stalked in his own office building. Tina Brown, or the countless losers who posted appalling solicitations on Craigslist, a frequent source of gawker material. Never mind that most items were links to other nuggets on the web. Spears, in Dorothy Parker fashion, had a way of extracting the part you most wanted to know and capping it off with a hilarious deadpan twist. She had the hound dog's ability to sniff out stuff buried in the most obscure blogs when some guy in a BLOG called Data Lounge made a remark about the size of Howard Stringer's doodle. Of course she found it. And once people started sending her stuff, celebrity sightings, overheard conversations, and actual gossip-worthy tips, things got even juicier. Working on a wheezing 3-year-old Dell laptop in her East Village apartment, Spears instantly became an addiction among the media hub, like Rolling Stone managing editor Ed Needham, who says he checks out Gawker more times a day than I'd like to admit. And here's the thing, if Spears or any of the Gawker media bloggers had done this on her own, the response would have been minimal. Denton's move to professionalize blogs bestowed instant credibility on an unknown single writer website. When Gawker launched, it was still unusual for a regular media site to reference the personal blog of some savant toward Smith, but it was well within bounds to discuss the well-hired hand of a new media publisher and even write stories about her. Denton hadn't merely created a blog, he'd created a brand. In almost no time, Gawker not only won an audience, but was chosen as one of Time's 50 best websites, and made Entertainment Weekly's It List. What was the toast of New York City paid to produce this pixelated gold? Well, at first it was $2,000 a month to produce 12 posts a day, 7 days a week. And of course, as a freelancer, benefits like healthcare and goodies, like stock options or equity, weren't even in the room, let alone on the table. Soon after Gawker launched in December 2002, Denton determined that it wasn't necessary to produce content on weekends, so he cut the stipend to $1,500 a month. Denton wants it known that more recently, he's upped his bloggers' salaries and gives a small bonus when page views increase. Spires was a star working at Walmart wages. So it couldn't have been much of a shock when she jumped to better-paying New York Magazine last fall. Replacing Spears would help answer a question: does the writer or the brand drive Nano Publishing? Denton's choice was Sika, an East Village art gallery director, and, more to the point, a howlingly funny blogger. Though the Spears cult at first resisted her less deft replacement, Sika's over-the-top glosses on celebrity foibles and skillet on her thing the right links won him his own following. Gawker page views rose even higher. Denton's next move, a porn blog called Fleshbot. His goal was not to capture the highfalutin erotica of sites like Nerve, but an intelligent presentation of dirty stuff. No normal guy jacks off to poetry, he wrote in a memo explaining the site. Employing his diamond in the blogosphere strategy, Denton found John Addario, a New Orleans-based art dealer. Fleshbot's launch in November 2003 happened to coincide with the discovery of the Paris Hilton sex tape. The porn gods were smiling on us, says Addario, whose handle is Jono. He posted pictures, a movie review, and ultimately links to the tape itself. Readers flocked to the site, like cats in heat. Denton, who spent a good part of the day coaching Jono via Instant Messenger, was ecstatic. Denton, you seen the traffic? Jono, OMG, yes. While Fleshbot won't always have Paris, the fast start gave it momentum. We have the whole Denton machine behind us, a hit force to be reckoned with, says Addario, referring to the synergy that comes from a single company's blogs linking to one another. Denton does have one ongoing complaint: we need to do more wankable stuff. Danton's next blog was a capitalized version of Gawker that hinged on finding a writer who took to political gossip as wittily as Pierce had taken on New York. The solution was Anna Marie Cox, an acetone dreadhead from Nebraska. She had worked for Suck before moving east with her husband. At the Chronicle of Higher Education, I wasn't a good fit. And she was fired after 6 weeks at the American Prospect for, among other things, not being civil to colleagues. She was working as a content monkey for AOL when Denton appeared in an instant message last October wooing her to do the Gawker thing in D.C. Denton, who is very hands-on in the early days of a new blog, described the project in his M. Denton, like I really want to know who throws the best dinner parties in D.C., why they're so desperately unglamorous, whether young reps and Dems find it hot to date across party lines, whether Carville and Motulin really live their lives out in public, how their hair gets that way, what politicians say when they're asking for money, how badly the Pentagon bureaucracy hates Rumsfeld. I want to understand how D.C. works, not the mechanics of cloture, but the social and political power lines. Like, if I was to come to D.C., whom would I have to schmooze? How could I conquer the town? What are the things about D.C. that the newspapers never tell you? Cox, that is a really tall order for someone getting paid $1,500/mo. Still, Cox wasn't about to fight. This is pretty much the only thing I can do, she says. She was initially averse to the gender-specific title of Wonkette, but Denton soothed her by typing, so long as you're lethal in the content, cute sinus of the name won't matter. Lethal she was, banging out hilarious, unabashedly lefty copy from the guest bedroom in her Northern Virginia suburban home. Once again, the pro effect kicked in. Wonkette got a cascade of attention from local and even national media outlets, despite the fact that much of what she wrote was way beyond the pale for those war horses. For example, she has an unsettling preoccupation with the word penis. Cox draws the line, however, at outing closeted gay politicians and bureaucrats, a bone of contention between her and Denton, who's all for it. Not all the press was good. Both Gawker and Wonkette were now big enough to have engendered a backlash, aimed mostly at their frivolous, even cruel, tone. Call it the snark factor. One writer complained that the sites weren't fair to black people. Another accused them of eschewing serious debates about politics and policy. Then Slate's Jack Schaefer accused Gawker and Wonkette of handing out rope beatings with a monotonous sadism. That one stung Cox, because she considered Schaefer a friend, and the Wonkette shed tears. But she had the consolation of being courted by CNN and profiled in the New York Times. I'm very lucky, she says. As is Cho Ayersika, who's gotten freelance gigs at the New York Observer, Rolling Stone, GQ, and, Wired. Is it a matter of time before they follow Spire's path to a real job? Or worse, will they do like the Gizmodo Guided and go to Nick Denton's nano publishing competitor? 4. Gawker's Talker, what does a nano publisher eat? Spied Nick wolfing down a mushroom omelette at Cafe Europa. Gee, his head is big. Overheard him saying he's meeting Jason Calacanis for drinks next week. Don't they hate each other? Jason Calacanis will cheerfully admit that the blood feud between him and Nick Denton is at least partly hype. Denton, too, characterizes it as an overplayed soap opera. They both confirm that every few months the two have dinner, and the conversation is considerably more polite than a typical Cho Ayersika item on Gawker. But the fact is that both men are bumping shoulders in the same space, hiring writers for their niche-directed, ad-supported blogs. The difference is that he wants to own everything, and I want to share it with the writer, says Calacanis. A blonde, fast-talking New Yorker, Calacanis started weblogs Inc. last year, hoping for the long-awaited home run that eluded him during the boom years when he ran a hot Silicon Valley news operation. Some of his properties are almost generically written, directed to business niches blogs on Apple, grid computing, Bluetooth, and nano publishing. Others are consumer-oriented and will hinge on their authors. His first big blog star, Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban, doesn't exactly need the bucks. Kala Kanis' initial attempt to raid Denton's stable was a pitch to Elizabeth Spears when she was still doing Gawker. I offered to pay her $40,000, split equity in the company, says Kala Kanis, who still can't believe that Spears went to a pulp dinosaur instead. She wanted credentials. It was the worst decision made by a media blogger to date. Now she's the 50th feature writer of New York Magazine. Kala Kanis also went after Peter Rojas, the Gizmodo writer, who was Denton's first blogger. Again, he offered something Denton wouldn't consider, yielding a piece of the action. Rojas accepted, taking half ownership in a new blog called Engadget, and the feud was on. Denton claimed in his own blog that he was royally shafted. But now he shrugs it off, figuring that losing his writers is the law of media careers. Do I expect writers to stay with the blogs for the rest of their lives? No, he relies on his belief that the blogosphere is an unending source of undiscovered talent, and posits that when writers defect, the ensuing buzz is actually a blessing in disguise. The change in Gizmodo has actually been fantastic for traffic, he says. Kala Kanis knows he comes off as a Sam Eaglick type in contrast to Denton's low affect. He's an English guy who likes to downplay things, says Kala Kanis. I'm a brash New Yorker. But Denton's lowballing is the most ridiculous thing in the world, he says, insisting that Denton wants big bucks as much as he does. All of which begs a big question: how much money really is in this blogging business? Those who have looked at the model conclude that there's no pot of gold here. In other words, they don't call it nano publishing for nothing. These are not large-scale journalistic efforts, says Martin Eisenholtz, CEO of New York Times Digital. I agree with Nick's characterization of them as like independent films, really small independent films. Do the math. Denton pays a writer something like $2,000 a month, and maybe $1,000 more in overhead. Gawker Media, with a one-person sales staff, has lured advertisers like Absolut Vodka, British Airways, Jose Cuervo, and the John Kerry campaign. Microsoft had been poised to advertise on Gizmodo, but then came that bicycle seat dildo. No sense of humor. Denton won't say how much he takes in, but he points to press accounts estimating that ad-based blogs might gross about $5,000 a month. Kala Kanis agrees that's in the ballpark. And if all the ads for Gawker are sold for the prices on its rate card, the total could be well over $10,000 a month. At the high end, that's $80,000, or so net per blog per year. Nice pocket change, but not yet the stuff of moguls. Even if, as some analysts say, that amount triples or quadruples in a few years, we are not talking about a bunk bed at her Balin summer camp. That's why, Denton says, he's not hiring full-time employees. Maybe it's not a real business. So why is Denton spending time on it? Denton says it's all about fun, stirring up things. Clearly he loves the process, the furious pack. And fourth thing on him, as he and a hot new writer plan a blog. It's an open question how much control freaking he can indulge in once the number of blog properties goes into double digits. He also gets a kick when his sites make trouble, like the time Catherine Zeta-Jones threatened to sue him after Gawker linked its readers to pictures of her unclothed pregnant torso. Vulnerability to libel suits is Denton's Achilles heel, says Slate's Mickey Kaus. And Denton didn't make things easier for himself when he told the New York Times that for his writers, speed is a higher priority than accuracy. Might Denton be doing this years from now? Yes, he insists. No exit strategies on the boil. Kala Kanis might not believe it, but Denton claims to be perfectly happy to approach his business by pinching pennies and taking his time. 5. Partying with Next of Kinja. In case you missed it or thought the invite was just another sick April Fool's joke, here's the rundown on the April 1st launch party of Kinja, Nick Denton's wonderful hey, he's the boss, suck blog reading software site. All the Gawkerites present, Cho Ayersika, and Gizmodo's new guy Joel Johnson, and Anna Marie Cox, still complaining to Slate's Jacob Weisberg about Jack Schaefer, Jeff Jarvis. Mayor Russian. A Condé Nast ad guy suggesting that Denton sell public service ads on Wonkette in conjunction with the New Yorker, right? Like that would happen. But why was conjugatus Meg Howrahan leaving early? Could it have something to do with the item on her Megnut blog that she was quitting Planet Denton? Denton's biggest play has been in the works for 2 years, Kinja, a blog of blogs that enables even tech-challenged cloths to become master blog consumers. The idea is to present a single free site that lets surfers punch in their favorite weblogs and thereafter receive a steady stream of items from them. What's more, they can publicly post a digest of favorites for others to admire and learn from, or choose from pre-selected and ad-friendly digests of the most popular blogs. Denton's bet is that Kinja will draw more eyeballs and all his writer-based blogs combined, as well as synergistically boost the page views of his other properties. And, of course, snare even bigger advertisers. Another possible revenue stream for Kinja might come from its ability to note the preferences and behaviors of blog readers. Companies like Tainarati, a website that maniacally monitors blog consumption, are already exploring the idea that the big payoffs from weblogs might be their ability to act as cultural thermometers. Down the line, Kinja might sell temperature readings to research-obsessed corporations. Denton hired PR co-founder Meg Howrahan to develop the product, which was set up early last year with the stealth title The Lafayette Project. Denton chose to proceed gingerly, and the effort apparently complicated by some disagreements on direction wasn't done until April of this year. Kinja's tardiness exacted a penalty. Back in Silicon Valley, an entrepreneur named Mark Fletcher began BlogLeans last July, getting the first rev up after only 3 months. His goal is similar to Denton's: create a way to organize your blog reading. That's easy even for non-geeks. Using a viral word-of-mouth buildup, he claims tens of thousands of users on a site that's been adding improvements month by month. Fletcher's take on Kinja: late to the game and not enough features. Denton admits the early returns are so-so, but thinks it's early in the game. Meanwhile, he's focusing on his nano empire and its 6 new blogs. The first is The Left Coasted The Famer. Later in the summer, he lads sites about dating and video games. For the Louisiana project, he's taking a slightly different approach, keeping the identity of his next brilliant blogger secret. The mystery is sure to create some chatter, and the new hire is less likely to be poached. At least until Jason Calacanis, or the Los Angeles Times, or Us Weekly figures out who he or she is. Then it's time to read more blogs and find another defamer. Empire building. Contributing writer Stephen Levy. Stephen at Echonic.com, a senior editor at Newsweek, profiled Lawrence Lessig in Wired 10.10.